Good morning. Welcome to the Performance Review and Scrutiny Committee. In the absence of Chair, can I ask for a nomination, please?
I'll nominate Councillor Johnson.
Councillor Johnson. Anyone else? Okay, Councillor Johnson. Good morning and welcome to today's meeting. The first item on the agenda is introductions and apologies. Apologies from Councillor Parry, Councillor Alexander and Councillor McCall. Pauline.
Can I just say that, can we not receive apologies from Kelly, Councillor Parry at the moment, because we know she's on maternity leave. So if we just put it down that she is permanent apologies at the moment.
Remember when we were in council meeting, there's no such thing as maternity. She's just not here. So we have to do apologies every meeting. Thank you. I know what you feel, but that's the way to do it. Order of business, please.
As set out on the agenda.
Thank you. Any declarations of interest can be made now or during the meeting, whichever is appropriate for you. And can we now go through the minutes of the previous meeting? Is everyone content with the minutes? Thank you. And to move on to the public reports. And the first one is 5.1, Adult Social Care Performance, Quarter 2. And that's on pages 13 to 28, and that will be introduced by Alison White. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just take you through some of the highlights of the report rather than in huge level of detail, and then happy to take questions. Adults Health and Social Care Services really continuing the major transformation areas obviously required by the integration agenda. In terms of integration in the last quarter, there's been a number of key areas of work that we've been focusing upon. The property strategy has been developed for consideration by the Integrated Joint Board. The Integrated Joint Board doesn't have responsibility for property within that. That remains the responsibility of both the Council and NHS Lothian. But obviously, as services develop, we have the need for use of buildings in amongst some of that. So it's been really clear for us to look at what those building requirements will be for the Integrated Joint Board moving forward. So that property strategy has been developed to take in place with that. One of the other key areas for us also is workforce within that, and a workforce framework is being applied. So we have a workforce strategy that's been in place, which has really been looking at workforce requirements and demands and challenges across health, council services, but also looking at the third sector and voluntary sector within amongst that. Some of the biggest challenges that we face within adult health and social care are around some of the shortages in some key areas around roles. And it's really for us to look at how we're developing that workforce in a more meaningful and coherent way. And the workforce framework is really about how we meet and address some of those needs. So it's being applied in particular service areas so that we can be really clear about how we develop teams in the way that we most appropriately need them. And the finance strategy, it continues to be worked and developed on, and obviously all are aware of the ongoing financial pressures, not just for the council, but for the IJB as a whole and amongst some of that. Within particular service areas that we have, older people, there's been a level of work that's been going on. Certainly the hospital at home service has increased the capacity. Now that is we've increased the nursing capacity and consultant capacity on that. And that's a really good way of ensuring that we can enable discharges in a more appropriate way where there's some level of medical need, and also prevent admissions to hospital as well in terms of the support that we can offer. So we've been able, through additional nursing capacity, to increase the number of equivalent beds that we could support within the community environment. Highbank Care Home continues to be exceptionally busy, supporting intermediate care and, again, avoiding unnecessary hospital admissions. It also has a really good role in supporting carers in the community. It offers a high level of respite in the community, and often that's a really good way of us ensuring that we can maintain people in their home environment supported by their families for a longer period of time. Although it has reduced its number of beds by one to increase the intermediate care facility, we're still able to meet that demand locally in terms of respite. There's really closer partnership working is underway between our merit service and the acute medical unit as well to ensure that we get a much clearer pathway between the hospital and to the community to make sure that people are being seen in the right places and amongst that. Learning Disability Services, day service review continues to be underway. The policy and strategy is progressing well to an implementation phase, and we're doing works with providers. Two key areas are around younger people with disabilities, and we're doing work with a couple of providers to ensure that we can meet that demand that will be coming up at the end of the school year when we've got a number of young people who are coming through that we're looking to provide resources for. And again, we're looking at reshaping some of our services for older people with a learning disability as well, and a more friendship model that we're looking at supporting people in a local community. Teviot Court, which is the development of 12 houses for people with complex needs, at that point we were saying is complete and being occupied in a phased approach. Actually, I think all of the properties are now filled. Interestingly, it was always around the fact that Teviot Court was never going to be a home for life. It was for people who were at that stage of most crisis, and in the time that some people have already been there, we're already at the phase of thinking that for some people we could look to move them on. There's been something about that really robust model of support that means that we can look to move to less intense support for some individuals. So there's been real benefits on that approach that we've already begun to see. Physical disabilities and sensory loss. Again, we've been continuing to use things about social media as a way of communicating with disabled people in the community. We've done a lot of work in terms of that information, particularly with our physical disability group. Often it's around that information. We've got a really good physical disability information guide that comes out so that people know about the directory and what's available. But information is often one of the key areas that we have for that group. We've been continuing to progress different areas, and the British Sign Language National Plan was launched on the 24th of October, and we're currently looking at guidance to create and inform a Middle Lothian plan, which obviously will come back through Council. Self-directed support continues to be business as usual activity. There's been a scheme that's been set up to assist individuals to utilise direct payments by providing an online list of prospective personal assistants, and that's been work that's been jointly done between adult services and children's services. And if you're on the list, often people are able to employ a personal assistant because they've got good networks, and if someone is isolated in the community, they maybe don't have some of those networks to be able to attract a personal assistant. So this was a way of personal assistants being able to identify themselves to the community as someone who was wanting to work in that way. And I think it's been a really popular, there's been lots of personal assistants signed up, and there's lots of people with direct payments who are making use of that resource. Within criminal justice, we've been able to fund a peer support development worker. This is in light of the development of the recovery hub that we're looking for in Dalkey Social Work Centre. And peer support is a really central way that we're working across mental health, substance misuse and criminal justice to ensure that actually it's not just professionals that are involved with people, but people can see and experience experienced people who've been through the system and get that sense from them about what works and how they can be supported to make improvements. There was training that was taking place in January as part of the introduction of Safe and Together, which provides a framework for partnering with domestic violence survivors and interviewing with domestic violence perpetrators in order to enhance the safety and well-being of children. And what we've been able to do is increase some of the capacity within the criminal justice team, which means that they will also be able to do non-court mandated work around domestic abuse perpetrators. So we're hoping that we should be able to see an improvement in the way that we work alongside colleagues in children and families. As often the biggest impact of domestic abuse is on children and young people. Substance misuse. Obviously, we were successful in getting funding for the development of the recovery hub, the capital funding to bring together mental health, substance misuse and criminal justice, which includes third sector partners. And this was really about how we could think about working with people differently. Obviously, in this time, we're talking about a consultation event which was planned for February. That has taken place. We got really good engagement from people, from users and carers across all three of the service user groups. And they were really positive about the fact that we were engaging with them, and there was nothing that people were coming up with in terms of what they wanted for the use of the building that it isn't possible for us to look at putting into that building. There weren't unrealistic expectations, there weren't things that were being asked for that in any way do we think that we can't facilitate. So they're wanting to remain engaged with that, and we've got other ways and means of getting involved with that. And as a group that we've got a project management group, we've taken on board all of the advice and suggestions that they're making, and we're continuing to work with some of those groups about how we make use of that building out of hours. Within mental health, the mental health access points in Pennycook and Bonnygrig continue to grow. And it's really about guiding people to support their need to increase their own mental well-being. 71 community services and resources have been signposted to, and over 60% of those who have attended have gone on to be offered an assessment for psychological therapies. We also have the wellbeing service in our 8 of our GP practice, and they're really closely aligned. Often the people that are going to the wellbeing services are people who have a low level of anxiety or depression, and it's around how we're supporting people to make good choices themselves and how we can offer them the right kind of support at the right time for them, which is really important. We've also, in joint working with the police, developed our triage project. Often police time is spent with people who may have significant mental health issues or substance misuse issues, and actually what the police are looking for is a quick way of accessing mental health services to know what support somebody has in place, because often it's mental health support that somebody requires rather than police time. And we really have seen substantial savings in police times following the introduction of the triage service. Carers, we're continuing to work towards the implementation of the for the new Carers Scotland Act that's in April, and we're progressing well towards all of that, and we'll be continuing to report in more detail following the implementation of that act. In terms of challenges we have seen financially, we've seen some improved budget position at quarter three. There's been some significant work done to ensure that we're meeting the targets that we've set, although some of that has been through one-off savings, which means that we will continue to face pressure in the coming year. In terms of quality issues, we have one care home that is subject to a large-scale investigation as part of adult support and protection because of concerns of quality within the care home and the safety of residents. They are currently closed to admissions, and we continue to work closely with them to ensure that we can improve the quality of care delivery for those providers. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Anyone got questions for Councillor Russell?
Thank you, Chair. Actually, a couple of things, if you've any mind. With the carers, with the Carers Scotland Act 2016 coming closer and closer to us in April, obviously I'm the carers champion, and I wondered if it was possible to have oversight of some of the subgroups and the actual group itself, what work they're doing. I'd find that greatly appreciative. The other one I'm pleased to hear with regards to the substance abuse and the recovery hub, I work quite closely with Horizon, and I know that they would be hopeful, anticipating that some sort of facility would be available to them for their volunteers to work, offering a cafe style for the people that actually use the building and obviously the people that are coming through recovery. So I'd like some kind of reassurance, if possible, if that was on the cards.
I'll take them in the order you've done them. In terms of the carers champion, yet that's not a problem at all. Sheila Swithenbank is our planning officer for carers, and I'll make sure that she gets in touch with you and gives you an update on where we are and looks at what are the meetings we've got available that it might be helpful for you to be part of in terms of that. And it's really good to have that oversight from elected members in terms of the carers' role, because they are so critical within our communities. Part of the reason for us getting linked in with the providers before we entirely finalised the design brief for the building was we needed to know that things like the Recovery Cafe were interested in being involved, because that will mean that for the kitchen on the ground floor we will need to do a specification that's slightly different than if we were just making teas and coffees. So we've been linked into seeing what we can do as part of that redesign, and certainly staff from Gary Sherritt's team who are helping us with the design brief for that have been involved with that to look at what we require in the building to make that happen. I suppose it's getting that balance between remembering that it's still a place where people will be coming for clinical support from psychiatry and nursing, and we need to make sure that we make good use of the building so that it's not overrun as a public cafe that means that people who are coming in for their other appointments, it becomes difficult for them. So we're looking at how we best make use of the space so that we can get the recovery cafe in, because we see the real importance of that, but that it doesn't have such an impact on the reception area that we can't make good use of that for people who were in for a really important or difficult appointment that they need a bit more peace and quiet for. So we're still working on the design of the reception to ensure that we can enable to do both of those. But and the volunteers from the Recovery Cafe are closely involved in that work.
Thank you. Councillor Smale.
I noticed on page 7 that we don't have any staff to work on our falls strategy. My feeling on this, and others know better, is that in terms of the philosophy of the IJB, clearly there's a huge benefit to be had in preventing an elderly person having a fall and then having hospitalisation. So it would seem to be perverse that we're not able to support this.
You will be pleased to know that we have now resolved that issue. So it was an NHS post, and we were struggling for a variety of different reasons to fill that post. As part of the new management restructure within the service, we have developed a professional lead role for occupational therapy, which is at a senior level, and we've, as part of that job description, ensured that the full strategy and the work that goes alongside that is central to that role, because you're right, the role of falls within the challenge of supporting older people at home is so critical that we wanted to ensure that we were able to embed that at a senior level within the management structure. So that has been addressed, and certainly from the 1st of April there'll be a senior manager with strategic lead for falls.
Thank you. I have a question as well. It's on page 1 and also on page 9, and it refers to the audiology repair clinics in the libraries, and although that might not seem hugely important to a big organisation, it's very important to people in the community who have difficulty even changing the batteries, because dexterity is muchly reduced, and it's disappointing that that's in some kind of trouble. Can you explain what's happening and what the plans are to address that?
I think some of the challenges that we were facing within it in terms of continuing to expand and develop this is, at the time of writing this, the decisions around some of the budget position hadn't been taken, and obviously libraries was one of the potential savings that was being put forward at that point in time. So because the audiology clinics were being run within the libraries, we needed to have a sense of clarity of what was happening in that setting before we further embedded that work. Obviously the decisions that have been taken around libraries means that we're in a much stronger position to ensure that we do continue to roll that out. But obviously it was very difficult for us to look at expanding and taking that service forward if the decision had been taken at council that libraries were going to be cut in any particular way. So actually this was obviously written at a point in time prior to some of those decisions being made. So on page 9 it's clear that part of that challenge is around the potential for library closures. But the group will be able to now there's a sense of clarity of what's happening with libraries to continue to roll that out. Because you're right, it's actually at one level a quite simple and straightforward thing to do, but it's often so difficult for individuals to take that lead on themselves. And there continues to be a commitment from library staff, and we'll work with them to ensure that that's further rolled out.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have questions further on adult healthcare? Thank you. And now we can move on to 5.2. Customer and Housing Services Performance, page 29 to 40, and that will be taken by Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Chair. In this last quarter for Customer and Housing Services, we produced the Strategic Housing Investment Plan that was brought and approved to Council and then submitted onwards to Scottish Government. And in the past week, we've had formal feedback, which is favourable in terms of that resource bid. We've yet to get the allocation in terms of the grant funding for the continued new build programme, but it certainly looks promising in terms of that feedback that we have recently received. In December, the Private Housing Tenancy Scotland Act came into being. So for all private sector tenancies from the 1st of December, the new residential tenancy agreement applies. That provides much more security for both parties in terms of the tenant and landlord. There's also provision in that legislation for rent pressure zones, where local councils can apply to have an area designated as such. However, I don't envisage that being the case in Midlothian. I'm aware that Aberdeen and Edinburgh are certainly making inquiries about the prospects there, for obvious reasons in terms of their private rented market. In terms of the revenues, the rent strategy and a consultation was carried out and again has since been reported to Council in terms of the investment and new build development continuing on the basis of the rent charges that have since been approved for 2019 and 20 for a 3-year period. In community safety, the strategic assessment was completed, which decided on the prioritisation of the criteria for crime prevention, drug and alcohol misuse, domestic abuse, food safety through the Community Planning Day in November. And members will be aware that the police community action teams, which are council funded, were reinstated in December. In customer services, we're proceeding in terms of the digital-led transformation theme from the Council's change programme, agreed from the budget, where there's work ongoing in terms of joint procurement of a customer relationship management system with East Lothian and Midlothian. In terms of challenges, clearly, as has been referenced, the budget process is one that all me and my colleagues have been engaged in prior to budget being approved, and that certainly has proven challenging, but it's now the delivery of that through the 5-year plan and the change programme, which will continue. In homelessness, the Care Inspectorate had recently carried out assessment of Pentland House and Poulton Centre, which are now fully operational and fully occupied, and that inspection report will come forward to Cabinet and indeed PRS in the next quarter. And certainly the principle of reusing those council buildings is one that we've submitted in terms of the savings proposals to continue to make use of those facilities and withdraw from bed and breakfast provision, which is much more conducive for homeless households, not just in terms of accommodation, but for employment and education and training to be accessed from those. In terms of welfare reform, it was reported to Council in November in terms of the impact, both in terms of individual households, but also the income stream to the Council, and that's reflected in the increase, as is detailed in the narrative, about the Scottish Welfare Fund effects. And I would also draw members' attention to the paragraph in terms of revenues under challenges for the report of internal audit on arrears recovery. That has indicated that we, has recommended that we should report to members in terms of overpaid housing benefit. That will be a new measure in 2018-19 reporting, but it's there in terms of having visibility in the current financial year for members in terms of overpayments of housing benefit, that which is recovered and that which is subsequently written off. And I'm happy to take questions, Chair.
Thank you. Anyone like to ask a question? Kenneth?
Thank you, Chair. Just one question. Bearing in mind, I'm mindful of the universal credit changes coming in and also combining that with the budget that was passed in February, I just wonder what you're foreseeing. Are we going to be able to meet the targets that have been set for housing with those two being put together?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure. Is that in terms of the delivery of the housing new build programme, or...?
Sorry. I mean with things like homelessness and helping people, those two coming together.
Sorry, I just misunderstood. Performance in terms of homelessness has certainly been impacted by welfare reform. We know that, particularly from the private rented sector, because as is referenced between the legislation change that took effect from December, the tax changes that are taking effect in terms of landlords for transactions and welfare reform in terms of universal credit, private landlords are coming out of the market where tenancies end, either naturally through a notice or indeed the move on from their occupants, their tenants at that time. So that market is largely shrinking, and people are tending to then present to us being homeless through no fault of their own, and the duty, of course, sits with the council. That said, with the range of housing options that have been developed over the last number of years, we've been able to maintain a static position in terms of homelessness and continuing to deliver on our duty, by which I mean we used to average about 500 presentations over the course of a year. Whilst there's still about 3 weeks to go, we're projecting at 475. So despite all those pressures that I've outlined and you're aware of, we're managing to meet our duty without any great or greater impact on homelessness than there has been. But it certainly has having an effect. We're seeing that change in the market, the private rented market particularly, and the shift as a consequence of that. Because homelessness historically was always single people aged under 25 who presented to us because of relationship breakdowns, whether that was through parents or partners. Now we see the shift is in terms of households of an adult and any number of children because of the end of a tenancy from the private rented sector, and indeed mortgage repossessions which occur from that too.
Thank you. Any other questions regarding housing and customer services? Thank you. We can now move on then to 5.3, Children's Services Performance, page 41 to 48, and that will be taken by Mrs. Trenent.
Okay, thank you, Chair. In quarter three, the main areas of progress, I suppose, to update are in relation to disability. We asked Vocal, a local organisation, to undertake a consultation with parents who have children with additional support needs or complex needs in relation to looking at a play scheme model for going forward. They've undertaken this. I can now report back that the report is inconclusive, as in that there is no strong preference from parents in relation to what model they would like to go forward. So we're currently in the midst of having meetings with all potential providers and parents in relation to looking at what a blended model would look like, which would meet the scope of all young people across Midlothian, those with complex needs and those with lesser needs, in relation to trying to build this up. So I will keep members updated in relation to that going forward. Since Christmas, we've also opened up another house within Woodburn Terrace for two young people who have severe and extreme complex needs, but who obviously attended local schools. So it was really important that we kept them within the local schools and also within easy reach of their families. So we've opened up this new complex supported accommodation along with Action for Children. And there's been various, obviously, other organisations within the council that have supported us in making sure that this house was furnished up to a reasonable standard, etc., in relation to taking this forward. So it's very early days. It's a new innovative way of working, and we're hoping that this, you know, is going to reap dividends as we go forward. Child protection in quarter three, child protection stats have dropped somewhat, and we now sit below the national average. The lead officer from the Public Protection Office, along with the reviewing officers, are having a look at these stats just to try and see what the trend is telling us at this moment in time. My own views is that the information today is that it's telling us that we're intervening at a much earlier phase and making decisions that obviously don't warrant kids either going in the register because we're either removing them because we have enough evidence and the risks are too high, or we're intervening earlier and preventing it getting to the child protection stage, which is really positive as we move forward. In relation to training, Alison's already mentioned in relation to the Safe and Together model, which obviously has a huge impact on children's services as well, because as we know, a lot of relationships do involve domestic abuse, and it's about how we work with both parents rather than just one parent as we move forward. So that training will be rolled out over the course of this year. Also children's services, that's now every single member of children's services staff trained in motivational interviewing techniques, which is been designed in relation to children's services staff only, so as that we have a consistent approach in how we're managing and dealing with them, some of the very challenging conversations that we need to have with parents as we move forward. Our looked after stats, at the moment we've seen a decrease in quarter three in relation to looked after at home, which is positive. Are looked after away from home. We have 180 children who are looked after and accommodated out with parental care, and as you can see, that's broken down into 6 to 4 in foster care, which is an increase of 4. External care, foster care, a reduction of 2, down to 28. Kinship care, we have 60, which is a decrease this quarter of 2. I would like to say that obviously that figure fluctuates somewhat each quarter. Within our own residential settings in quarter three, we only had 8 young people at the time of writing this report within our own houses, which is a decrease of 3. External residential, 17, which was a decrease of 1. However, secure care, we had a 3, which was an increase of 2. So it's it fluctuates every quarter, but on the whole, it averages out to be that we're heading in the right direction. Hawthorne Family Learning Centre continue to work with SureStart up in Pennycook in relation to Hawthorne deploying staff up to SureStart premises and working with families who would normally get the bus ride into Hawthorne Family Learning Centre. This has proven to be really beneficial, and in particular what we've seen is attendance rates have increased significantly. It ain't rocket science, if you've got something on your doorstep, you're more likely to attend more regularly than send your wee one on a bus for an hour to the other part of the county. So what we need to do is replicate this as we go forward in relation to building that relationship and finding more creative ways of doing things. So that's a piece of work that will continue, and I'll continue to update. As I've already mentioned, residential care, they've had quite a settled quarter three, which is really good given the experiences that they had last year. So we're hoping that continues. The family placement team, we continue to work with PACE, and we have quite a number of children now, 11 children at the time of writing under the age of 12 that are involved in this programme. The main aim, the stretch aim of this programme is to have any child under the age of 12 with a permanence plan within 7.5 months. This is an overview, at Scottish Government level, and is obviously pioneering as we go forward. I would, I suppose just to give a wee bit reassurance that a permanence plan can also mean going back home again. So we'll wait and see what the findings of that come in October this year, once we've had a year running with this pilot. Foster and adoption also had an unannounced inspection in November 2017, and all grades remained the same at grade 4, apart from the support to foster carers. Our understanding from that is our family placement team is a very new team due to virtually every single member bar one being on maternity leave. So obviously within the restructuring we had to change some of the personnel within that team because a lot of them weren't there anyway. So the team are fairly inexperienced in relation to the support going forward. So there's a development plan in place in relation to making sure that they're brought up to speed in relation to providing that support to our much valued foster carers and getting the experience themselves under their belt. So challenges, as with us all, is the budget, and obviously having an increase in secure care obviously has a huge impact on budgets as we go forward, so we will continue to monitor that. And the other thing is just obviously the Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry, which is gathering momentum. Obviously with us having a Nazareth House and a St Joseph's within Midlothian, Nazareth House being the area that they're looking at the moment, then we're being asked for quite a lot of information. At the time of writing, we had 3 Section 21 requests, and quarter four will evidence a huge amount more, almost double that in relation to information that's been gathered. However, the team are working on that, but it is a challenge going forward because it's a big piece of work. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Margot?
Thank you, Chair. Regarding residential care, I see you've got the temporary closure of Woodburn Court. I don't think it's the name of the building. Are you referring to the one that's just opposite Woodburn Court, Dalkeith? Yeah, not that. I'll just make sure I was on the right track. It says here that it was temporarily closed. Can I ask why was it closed? Are you allowed to tell us why it was closed? And has it reopened?
Yep, it's closed because we are changing the houses into Woodburn and Pennycook, which are purpose-built houses, are 4-bedroom. What we're doing is making them 5 ensuite bedroom houses because we need the same amount of staff within 5-bedroom as we do in 4-bedroom. And in relation to managing that, from my perspective, that makes it a much easier model going forward. The care inspector are totally on board with that. And I can now advise that it's not closed at this moment in time. There was an emergency just prior to the snow falling where we needed to accommodate an entire family, so Woodburn Court was opened up again. So, yeah.
Thank you. Councillor Smale?
I noted that we've had an increase in the numbers in secure care. Are we able to absorb the budgetary impact of that within the numbers that we're currently dealing with, or will you need to ask for some more to be allocated?
I mean, clearly I'm in constant contact with our finance people anyway. I mean, it does make the budget position very, very challenging. I'm in regular contact. It's very difficult to predict. It's like the winter maintenance budget, you know. Something comes in, at the, you know, from left wing or other agencies request that someone goes to secure. It's not always us that ask for it. So, yeah, we are looking at how we're going to manage that going forward. Obviously, we try to predict children are only insecure for limited periods of time. So we're trying to predict when, you know, when they will exit secure in the hope that we don't get any other people going into secure so that we can try and get a balanced budget. But it is very challenging and obviously I'm in ongoing negotiations at this moment in time to see how we can resolve that going forward.
Thank you, Councillor Beard.
Thank you. It was just to ask, looking at the secure and step-down care, how do we compare to the national average with that? And if, and obviously we're mindful of the huge cost comes to us, is it worth us looking at having something in-house here that would help mitigate the cost?
Secure care is obviously managed by Scottish Government and you need permission in relation to setting up a secure care. Obviously what we're doing is looking at more creative models. And there is no easy solution. You know, our residential houses cannot lock a front door, so you cannot prevent somebody from going away. And, you know, an instance of one of the kids that have gone to secure committed a very, very serious crime. And, you know, with the best will in the world, as much as we try to advocate for kids, there are some... Well, every single circumstance for all these young people, we can't defend these decisions that are being made. I mean, we have a secure care placement within Edinburgh, but we can never ever, very rarely do we ever get a bed in Edinburgh. Now, it's obviously four times bigger than us, so, you know, in relation to ratios, I would say we're above the Scottish average at this moment in time, but last year we sat below it the entire year. It's an unknown quantity, and, it, you know, it's just sometimes it's a mixture of the young people that just come up. Within getting into our service or move into Midlothian from other areas, and it's just unfortunate how things pan out for them. So in relation to getting our own model, we are looking with other organisations, Lifelong Learning etc, to think is there something more creative, but you know it is a very high risk area, so, and as I say, if they go to a children's hearing or are in front of a sheriff and they make that decision, then unfortunately is out with our control.
Thank you. Can you explain to me what the difference in step down and secure is? Because I see the cost the same, but I don't know what the difference is.
Step down is within the secure unit where they start to get passes to go out to the shops, they get passes to go home if that's deemed appropriate. If the risk assessment suggests that that's a task that they're able to undertake, because obviously what we don't want, what happens in the adult system is, you know, them coming out of secure, i.e. jail, because that's what they are, they're locked up, and then coming straight out free to do whatever they want. So we want to test that as we go forward. And what we normally request is a 3-month step-down programme when someone comes out of secure. If they've been in for a significant period of time, sometimes it works and sometimes it escalates straight back up to secure. But the warrant allows you to escalate it straight back to secure without us having to go to a sheriff, etc. So it gives us that flexibility going forward. So, yeah, it gives us a chance to test them to see when they're ready to come back into the community again.
Thank you. And the other question I had was, you know, putting children in secure is an awfully extreme measure. And what are we doing to prevent other children getting to that stage in our prevention work?
Clearly, I mean, the stats that we're looking at in relation to child protection and looked after are reducing. So obviously we can see some evidence that we're intervening early. We have groups within education and lifelong learning, including health and police, where we regularly meet, where the offenders that are regularly coming to the attention of communities are being discussed. Looking at preventative models, so can we put youth workers out in the street if we're getting a particular difficult area, say within Bonnerig Toll or something like that. So we are looking at that constantly in relation to try and avoid future scenarios like this happening. So there's a lot of work happening in that area.
Thank you. Are we all done on that topic? Thank you. And then moving on to 5.4, communities and economy performance, and that will be taken by Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just concentrate on three or four things arising over the quarter three,
there's a full report, obviously, before you, so I won't go into all of it. But just to pick on some key things. Well, in November, there was the adoption of the Midlothian Local Development Plan. And I can't really overstate the importance of that in terms of giving you as the planning authority the maximum level of control and the ability to meet housing need, specifically in the affordable housing sector, to certainly promote the economy, to protect and enhance the environment, and to control inappropriate development. So an up-to-date local development plan is a key feature of that. And with the action programme having been agreed by Council just last month, that completes that setup. I think that's a really beneficial thing for Council. Also in November, there was the Community Planning Day, which Kevin referred to briefly, a broad-based community input to the agenda for communities in Midlothian. And that's particularly relevant for a number of reasons. One is the implementation of the Community Empowerment Act, which is now really coming into force as clauses become active. The opportunity for community asset transfer of buildings and sites, the development of participatory budgeting, of which there have been some examples already in some of the communities here, and also the Council's own services with the Communities Transformation Programme. In other words, how does the Council as a whole engage with communities in the context of that changed environment, which is really predicated on the Community Empowerment Act, the implementation of that. Just another one to mention, in December and indeed in January, we've had meetings with the University of Edinburgh and with Transport Scotland in relation to the Easter Bush area. As you know, it's probably our prime employment area in Midlothian. There's over 2,000 jobs actually in there at Easter Bush. And one of the issues has been the potential constraint from access to the strategic road network, Transport Scotland's A702 road. We're working with Transport Scotland and the University and through City Deal to try and ensure that that constraint doesn't come to fruition. And the other issue we've talked to Transport Scotland about is the A720 Sheriff Hall in the context of City Deal. The draft orders for the improvement to Sheriff Hall will be published in the summer of 2019. Now, it's difficult to give an indication of timing in terms of implementation of a scheme beyond that, but my guess would be that we're looking at perhaps a five-year programme in total before we see the completion of the improvement at Sheriff Hall. But that's quite normal because the draft orders could be the subject of a fair bit of objection and inquiry. And there's then the design programme itself, which takes longer. Normally, design takes longer than the actual implementation, the building of the road. And just to give the planning service a mention in terms of two national awards, which they scooped in November, the Scottish Awards for Quality in Planning, and that was for work at the Dalkeith Town Centre. That's the work over the five-year programme. And also jointly with Melville Housing Association in terms of the renovation of the Corn Exchange in Dalkeith. So they did well with that. Just picking up on the challenges, probably four, I'd say. One is providing the infrastructure to keep pace with the scale and the nature of the housing development which is occurring now and will do for at least the next 10 to 12 years. And in terms of my inbox, it's the thing which the Community Councils write to me most often about and which I'm fielding questions on and which I'm happy to do. But it is certainly a challenge and one that's very much in the minds of communities, community councils and the Federation itself. Confirming City Deal investment in Midlothian. We're at a critical time now. The heads of terms were signed off back in July last year, which was very much, as it says, a heads of terms, a very, very, just a 4 or 5 page document. The detail of that in terms of the business cases for projects and the full terms of the City Deal will be probably signed off in the next couple of months. And it is critically important at this stage that each of the partner councils make sure that it's actually getting what it intends to get out of City Deal. So that's a challenge at the present time. Implementing the spirit as well as the letter of the Community Empowerment Act. I won't say any more than that because I touched on it earlier, but this is a significant change to the way in which public authorities, not just councils, but public authorities deal with communities and engage with them and support them. And finally, just a refocus on the Economic Development Service. That's currently under review, and what's under review is not necessarily just the service, but also
the economic development programme, what are the priorities we're looking at. There are simple things which we need to look at. For example, we know through Business Gateway there is a lack of business premises for small-scale operators who just want a roller shutter door and a very small area just to operate from. We're really suffering from a lack of those sorts of premises, and it's looking at ways in which we can not just have a strategy, but we can actually implement and get premises on the ground, and that works in progress. Chair, that's really all I wanted to touch on. Obviously, there's a whole lot of stuff in the report, but happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Any questions, Colin?
Could I just ask about the child poverty on page 9? Could you explain the target figure of £3 million that's mentioned in it? And when are we likely to see a new child poverty action plan for Midlothian? And could elected members maybe have a development session on the poverty proofing the school day project?
Through you, Chair, yeah, absolutely. I would have thought that, well, certainly there's been work on the Child Poverty Action Plan over the past year, so it's well developed. What I would suggest, therefore, is that rather than give you half an answer now, that we do set up some sort of session with the communities team and with the lead officer, and that we take you through that.
Thank you. Any Councillor Smale?
Thank you, Ian. You touch on the incident at Newbarra's Crescent Gore Bridge. I think the councillors are all conscious that we had a legal action against the consultants for a substantial sum of money relating to that. Are we any further forward knowing when the judgment will be issued in that case?
Sorry, I can't help you on that one. That's really one through our legal team, which I would need to be queried. But in a sense, I'm dealing with the technical side of things, both in terms of not so much that instance now, because that's very much finished. The report of the incident management group, of course, was completed and reported to council in December. Obviously, I'm dealing with, through our environmental health team, the other ongoing incident in terms of Melville housing primarily. But in terms of the legal side, apologies, I'd need to refer that to our chief legal officer.
Thank you. Is that something we can take forward offline?
Absolutely. I can ask Alan Turpey to advise members as to the current position.
Thank you. Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of things. It was great that we managed to win the Scottish Awards for Quality and Planning for the Dalkeith Town Centre and the Corn Exchange. That was a brilliant piece of work, and have to always commended the staff on that. But it also leads me to ask the question about, you know, you've got in here about master plans in Newgrange Town Centre, etc., which is great as well. But where does that leave us here? The local members and the members of the council with regards to Dalkeith Town Centre improvements. We haven't heard anything about that for quite a wee while. But also, can you maybe update us on the support for the Dalkeith Improvement District, how that would be materialised and how would it look when it was completed?
OK, in terms of the scheme which was implemented at Dalkeith over the period 2009-2014, the issue now is probably more about maintenance of the improvements which took place both in the public realm and in relation to the buildings themselves. But in relation to that particular programme, obviously that's at an end, and at the present time there's no further bids through that programme, through the Heritage Lottery Fund or Historic Environment Scotland for any further works at this time. In terms of the Business Improvement District, then we have one of our officers in the Economic Development Team, Caroline White, who's been working with the team here in Dalkeith. And if that all comes to fruition, and obviously we'll support that process, is then we would probably undertake the sort of support, in-kind support, which we have elsewhere. So in terms of we could act as a secretariat, we could support the management group, and if there were some issues to do with, you know, if there's HR issues or anything like that, then we can support that. But I noted at the the cabinet meeting when looking at this a few weeks ago, then there was approval from one of the local members or one of the members that they felt that the council at the present time was supporting the Dalkeith bids process and were happy to continue to engage with that. And if you and local, so if you and local members want a further briefing on that, then I can arrange for Caroline and myself to do that.
Thank you, Councillor Casti.
Thank you, Chair. Could I just ask about the LEADER project? I'm a bit concerned reading it that there seems to be a bit of a downturn on it, and I was wondering, could Brexit and the uncertainty of the future of LEADER be the reason why less people are applying for the funds?
My own understanding is I don't think it is. I don't think there's a reticence or an anxiety about Brexit which is doing that, because at the moment that programme is secure until it completes in 2020. The uncertainty as to whether there'll be any programme beyond that at the present time, there's no expectation there'll be a further round of European LEADER funding. The allocation is around about £3.4 million for the Tyne-esque LEADER area, which comprises the rural areas of Mid Lothian and East Lothian. The current projections are that the money is likely to be spent, that we shouldn't have any left over. There's various parcels, if you like, so there's some demarcation. So some of the money is for example, farm diversification. Some is for joint projects with other LEADER programmes. And we have one running with Borders LEADER, so we look as if we're going to be able to spend the money there. So often it is the case of getting the money out the door for these things, but I'm reasonably comfortable and confident from what I'm hearing from the project manager who's in my team, that the progress is good and that the local advisory group is making the right decisions in terms of just taking that forward.
Any more questions on that topic? Councillor Casti?
One more, thanks, Chair. I'm looking at the tobacco, the problem for recruiting an enforcement officer. Is this why the tobacco testing visits are down? Because we seem to be failing on that a bit.
Yeah, we haven't undertaken the sort of as much test tobacco work as we would hoped. The Scottish Government has allocated money to each local authority to be able to appoint a tobacco monitoring officer, for want of a better term, and that's over a three-year period. We have been in discussion with our East Lothian partners because, of course, there's a trading standards partnership. There has been some delay in trying to recruit somebody, but we are still intending to do so and to make use of that Scottish Government money in terms of upping the programme in relation to trying to prevent breaches of the tobacco legislation.
Thank you. Are we all done on that report? We move forward to education performance, and that would be taken forward by Dr. Vickers.
Thank you. Committed to the creation of a world-class education through excellence and equity, this year we've set three broad strategic priorities, raising attainment and achievement, learning provision and leadership. With reference to raising attainment, back in December, the Scottish Government for the second time published the Curriculum for Excellence levels. That's the levels of attainment of children from primary one all the way through to the end of S3. And the table on page 2 of the education report outlines the difference between this year's attainment and the previous years. I'm pleased to say that there were improvements in 14 out of 16 of the key measures. However, attainment is still below the national average, so we're doing lots of work there this year to bring attainment in line with the national average, and we have three specific attainment visits with our primary schools, and we're pulling off data all the time in order for us to ensure that we intervene at the point in which we know that a child may not achieve their expected level by the end of the year. In terms of closing the gap, however, relating to SIMD 1 and 2, the most deprived deciles, the following improvements were notable. There was a 7.16% improvement by the end of P1,
a 9.74% improvement by the end of P4, an 8.27% improvement by the end of P7, and a staggering 17.6% improvement by the end of S3. So we know we're doing something right in terms of closing the gap. Where we're going to need to focus on moving forward, interestingly, is around SIMD10, which is our most affluent decile. So that's an interesting profile that we have. In terms of learning provision, we're continuing to focus on attendance, improving attendance and reducing exclusions. The quarter three achievements are notable in terms of exclusions, particularly in the primary sector, where there was a drop of 31% of exclusions and a drop of 2% in the secondary sector. But in the secondary sector, we still have a way to go because we want these to see to fall even further. However, within attendance, we're not seeing the same level of improvements. So between Jones Service and the Education Service, we're going to launch a combined action plan on that in order that we can address that so that it doesn't fall any further. Some things that we're seeing, for example, are unauthorised absence where parents are taking children out for holidays during term time, and that seems to be a symptom of the economy, so we're seeing more of that coming forward. We've done a lot of work on 0% and under 50%. So now we want to target that sort of under 80% attendance. So we're beginning to narrow that down. But certainly for me, it's an area of urgent priority for us. In terms of early years, we are working hard on the expansion and the preparation towards the 1140 hours. The deadline for a report submission that was due into the Scottish Government in February had been moved to March, so that work is done, but we're still unclear in terms of what the funding will be, and we hope that there'll be an announcement around the funding for the 1140 maybe in May or June time, which will be beneficial because it'll help us move forward with the models. But we are one of the local authorities that are implementing the trials for the 1140 hours. The good news around attainment within the early years is that the percentage of children achieving their expected developmental milestones has also improved. So that's really good news for us, particularly those children coming into P1. And in terms of lifelong learning and employability service, that's a service that's moving from strength to strength. They've done a lot of work with employment learning Midlothian and launched a conference, and that conference was very, very well attended in particular, and they're also doing work in terms of adults who are homeless. So that's quite exceptional work that's happening there. And in quarter four, we'll be formally reporting on the positive destinations, because that was something that was updated in Insight for the first time. So we'll be reporting on all of those measures, the national measures and positive destinations, in quarter four. In terms of emerging challenges and risks, I've outlined those in that table, including obviously the budget challenge, the challenge around the publication of the review of education in its entirety, that the bill that was launched, and obviously there was feedback and consultation period on that, so we're awaiting the publication on what that might look like and whether that will become an act, because that would be a significant change for education.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Councillor Beard.
Thank you, Chair. First, just on the budget there, obviously I'm mindful that we've got challenges within attainment and raising that. How do you do you feel like with the budget put in place in at last council meeting, do you think those do you think you're going to see improvement in attainment, or is that going to be a challenge?
I think the one benefit that we have is the rate of demographic growth. So that will certainly help us manage budget challenges moving forward. For me, it's about the interventions that we have within the classroom and leadership. So the work that we've done over the last 3 years in particular around visible learning and the key strategies that we have in place, I think will stand us in good stead moving forward. What we are beginning to see coming through in terms of the demographic growth are more children with additional support needs, which is an interesting profile. So we need to monitor that very, very closely. But in terms of the improving trend within education, we're beginning to see four-year patterns where we're above our virtual comparator. So that gives me confidence that actually we're moving in the right direction there.
And just on the, I'm just mindful as well, but showing the leadership within the schools, how have teachers and head teachers responded to the approved budget? Have they had that time to absorb that yet?
So what we do in education from the end of February right through to May, we go into what we call a staff planning exercise. So as soon as the budget was confirmed at Council, we built all of that into their staff planning so that they know within all of those spreadsheets that saving has already been built in for them. So I think that that's helped considerably because they can work through their constraints. And one of the other budget savings was the reduction of the carry forward allowance. So that was sitting at 2.5%. Which was actually very generous. A lot of councils historically have moved away from that, so that's something where we would take that from their carry forward. And obviously we would have had increased financial discipline over the last wee while because we did have an overspend that we've brought down significantly, but also it means that that carry forward, they're not necessarily going to miss that, if you like, because for some of that they would have been over the 2.5% carry forward. I think what we'll see is emerging challenges over the next maybe 3 to 4 years rather than the immediate year ahead. So that's about what we do as a service to utilise our services more effectively. So for things like the pathway service, PAVE and PAVE 2, we have three distinct services. So we're going to look at integrating those and actually would it be financially beneficial to us, but also provide a higher quality service if we integrate far more. So that's work that's in year two of the savings.
And just one last follow-up question. With the proposals put forward and accepted by Council, do you believe that they are achievable in the full amount, bearing in mind what the audits have said in the past, that it's been difficult to achieve fully the savings?
I think across all services it will be a challenge, but we're being really rigorous in terms of how we're applying that because of the size of the education budget. The majority of our budget is spent on staffing, so getting that staffing exercise right at the very beginning is actually our key to make sure that we can balance our budget. The service review, that is those three areas that I spoke about, pathways, PAVE and PAVE 2, that's about us being really rigorous and mapping the needs of children and making sure that it's proactive service and ensuring that we're not reacting. So it's about planning learners' journey over time, and I think if we get far better at that, then we won't be dealing with crisis points that come at transition, you know, that P7 into S1 or an S4 child who's beginning to fall out of the way, closer links with lifelong learning and employability. And the review that was undertaken for that service, which also took quite a bit of funding from that service, actually has delivered a service that when it was launched in the January 2016, then was inspected in the September and October, actually ensured very good across the board. And that was to do with how joined up it became, but also it being firmly embedded in education. And I think the close working with Jones Service and Children's Services, that close relationship actually helps us to be far more preventative in our work to avoid any of those escalating costs.
Thank you. Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Chair. The Lifelong Learning and Employability Service, I know they do a really good job, and I know the work that they've done in my area. And Keith, and given the high percentage of unemployment, etc., it's always good news for any kind of increase in employment. One question I've always had with regards to what we class as positive destinations. I wonder if you can elaborate on what does that mean in real terms for the children and adults, etc. Is that actual jobs or is it further education? And if it is jobs, what kind of jobs?
So in Midlothian, we have a high percentage of school leavers that move on to employment, higher than a number of other local authorities, which is a real strength. For some, what we're doing with lifelong learning and employability is particularly looking at those who move into low-paid employment to ensure that we have the education that we require, both provided within Midlothian and with our colleges, to make sure that we've got that pipeline to enable those particular low-paid workers to actually move up on that pipeline. And we've been working specifically with Skills Development Scotland on developing that. We know that we've got more children moving into further education than higher education, so that's
that's something that we want to really build on. So our Centres of Excellence idea is to help us do that, so we begin to flip the curriculum. Our concern at present is, although we have some young people moving on to further education, there's a large proportion of those who enter who actually drop out within the first year. So what the Lifelong Learning and Employability Service are doing is far more closer links with college to get those college placements right in the first place. So for some it was maybe granting them a college place, but we knew it wasn't sustainable over time. And the one good thing that the Lifelong Learning and Employability Service have done, particularly with our really vulnerable young adults, is ensuring that they have multiple chances at success. So they may, for example, start with an activity agreement placement, so like an apprenticeship. They may drop out of that, but we're allowing them then a second or a third chance in that, because sometimes maybe they need a bit of volunteering and a bit of a youth activity agreement before they're actually ready to undertake paid employment. And although that's quite resource intensive, actually it's worked for us, because when we look at the sustained positive destinations, they're actually able to retain that paid employment when they get it. But we definitely need to work more on that skills agenda and up in the number of courses that we're providing, particularly the links with Easter Bush. We've been working really closely with the university on ensuring actually that we've got apprenticeship opportunities, but a lot of the courses that they're providing links with our secondary school, so the children have access to that higher level learning, so they've got more success and actually through the LEAPS programme, for example, to enter university, particularly if they're the first child in a family who are applying for university. We're trying to encourage that and fund that far more.
Thank you. I will. Sorry, Councillor Smale.
I defer to Councillor Winchester. You note the effect of the Education Scotland Act 2015 and the matter of Gaelic provisions raised. My understanding is that, due to the numbers, we have to taxi many pupils to North Edinburgh for Gaelic study. Is the trend likely to mean a very large financial burden going forward? Would there be at some point a consideration of having local Gaelic education in Midlothian?
I think in terms of the provision at Tina Parker, because they can provide Gaelic provision for P1 all the way through, we only have a few families that actually access that or request that. So I don't think in the future it would be something that we would solely look at for Midlothian, because I don't think that we could staff it, and finding enough Gaelic teachers is going to be a challenge. But it may be something moving forward that a number of smaller local authorities may want to look at something there. The provision in Edinburgh is excellent though, so we know that they can also transition from primary into secondary. So even if we did, between a number of small local authorities, have a primary Gaelic provision, we would never manage to do that at the secondary level. So I think it's important that we look at the all-through learner journey for these children. And we're obviously working closely with our Equalities Officer on making sure that we're fulfilling what we're required to do as part of the Act, and planning that moving forward. But just given the numbers, I would doubt whether it's something in Midlothian that we would ever have to plan for on our own.
Thank you, Councillor Winchester.
Thank you. I'm just thinking about the expansion for the 11 to the 11:40 hours in 2020. Now, that's only 2 years ago, 2 years away, and I know you know that. How many extra child carers do we need in Midlothian? And are there plans afoot now to get those prepared and ready?
So we need to check the exact amount to give you that, but what we did was we set up a whole bank of training programmes, because we were aware that we have a number of fixed-term learning assistants, for example, and what we've tried to do is ensure that everybody across the council is aware of those training opportunities. A huge number of our learning assistants have actually applied for that training, and that means we're doing that together with Edinburgh College. So that means that by 2020, these people will be trained in order to take up those posts. And it is also something that we offered out with the budget reductions at the February Council decision, that we were saying actually those opportunities, given that it's a growth area, should be shared across the board with some people who may be losing jobs in one sector. Are they interested in being retrained? Because you're absolutely right. We can do all we can with property, but are we actually going to be able to staff it? So that is going to be a challenge, but we've already started on that, knowing that every single local authority by 2020 are going to need the same type of staff, so it is difficult.
Thank you. Councillor Douglas? Lee Douglas, sorry.
Thanks, Grace. I just wanted to ask, can you update on the evidence that the Scottish, on the 1140 hours, can you update on the evidence that the Scottish index of multiple deprivation has been used in the phasing plans for the expansion, just to ensure that the families and communities who stand to benefit most from the expansion benefit first?
That's something that's been looked at as part of the trials. So we're currently waiting for further information to come back. So the return that was made back in 2017 and the most recent return that was made in March, which was actually, I think, just last week, we're waiting on information to come back. So they'll look at all of that. And then I think that that will be presented to COSLA in terms of how they're going to fund it. The trials certainly took into account SIMD, and that's something that we wanted to particularly do. But in addition to that, you'll remember we also opened the new facility in Woodburn Primary, and that was designed to be to cope with vulnerable twos, but also to provide parenting programmes at the same time. And that's the kind of approach that we want to roll out within our targeted communities. So we're almost taking a more enhanced approach through our SIMD areas. So that would be within the New Battle Learning Community, which would include Mayfield, Lawfield, absolutely in Woodburn, and then we would be rolling that out, and we hope to apply for additional funding if we can show that that's been successful. But we've had many ministerial visits to Woodburn, so it is something that the government are also interested in, because we know that you require not just the education for the child, but you need the parenting programmes both at the same time. And we've also had success of some of those parents actually becoming our childcare development workers. So that's been an interesting spin-off from that, and that's some people going from having no employment straight into those kinds of jobs.
Thank you, Councillor Baird.
Thank you. Just to follow on from that, actually, I note the good work that the working group is doing on the 1140 hours. I wonder if it would be appropriate for, say, us and like the Education Committee just to sort of lug in to those meetings, so we can kind of get a better idea of how things are progressing. Not necessarily participate, but more sort of just listening.
Well, the next stage that we're planning would be a report to Cabinet, so that can absolutely be referred on here. The next bit that we need is the financial information, and at that point I think that we can open it up more, because they're highly technical, the workshops at the minute, and they're basically working out in terms of the property we need, staffing ratios and the training plans. But absolutely moving forward, when we've got that additional information, certainly we could help facilitate that. And I think when we bring forward the Cabinet report, it'll provide more detail in terms of a lot of the different spreadsheet exercises we've been required to do, because a lot of those submissions have been basic number crunching exercises, with the exception of the training programme that's been the more creative part of it.
Thank you. Are we done with education for the meantime? Thank you. We can now move on to commercial operations, pages 93 to 106, and that will be taken forward by Mr. Moffat.
Thanks, Chair. It's probably fair to say that commercial operations operate in a very much a changing environment, and the service is very much at the forefront of changing to meet the various targets and objectives that we've got. So what I'd like to do is just kind of focus for members on kind of some of the areas where that change is taking place. So within waste services, I've mentioned their progress with the residual waste plant. Any of you that have driven down the A1, indeed from further afield, will probably see the building that's kind of rising from the ground quite substantially at Miller Hill. So that's our energy from waste plant. And the reason why, there's two reasons why I'd specifically focus on that. One is that residual waste plants are historically very difficult to get to this point. And indeed, there was a meeting of the waste managers across Scotland last Friday, and there's very many of them are envious of Midlothian's position in that regard. So I visited this site, and it's actually one of the best construction sites that I've ever been on. And to that end, it's coming in on budget and it's coming in on time. So by late 2018, we'll start commissioning of that plant. They'll start to take our waste. And the other benefit of that is it means that in terms of the landfill ban that's due to be introduced on the 1st of January 2021, we will more than meet our obligations as a council in that regard. Moving on, and just to kind of a flavour of the change within Landing Countryside, that service is very much now orientated towards a commercial outlook, and that's about going out and winning work against the private sector. And indeed, we've now spread our wings, so to speak, and we're working in Scottish Borders area. And as a consequence, we are achieving an income of over £400,000 in 17-18, with a view to extending, increasing that next year. And in terms of increasing our income, members will be aware that there was a previous report in relation to Vogrey Golf Course and where it was struggling, essentially, to cover its costs. So I'm pleased to say that we've had a substantial increase, through not least of which is the efforts of the staff at Vogrey in terms of encouraging people to use the facility. But we've also put out a number of offers that's managed to do that. But we're not sitting on our laurels. We're now looking at how we can generate additional income across Vogrey. And the latest one that we're looking at to introduce from April at Vogrey is what they call foot golf. It was something that was operating in the Edinburgh area. We've now taken advantage of that to bring those customers out to Vogrey. So we see that as another way in which we can increase our income. But the bigger picture is that we are currently looking at a feasibility study for the future of Vogrey. What are the potential options that Vogrey can offer? And that's something that we'll come back to members in due course for consideration. Moving on, our travel service. We've recently gone through a significant audit carried out by the Freight Transport Authority looking at our garage facility. And there's a number of recommendations that I've listed in this report that were taken forward. And that will put us in a good position when we move to Hopefield. And at that point, again, from that income generation perspective, we're looking to expand the range of services that we offer up there, one of which is currently the taxis within Midlothian have to go into Edinburgh to have their vehicles MOT'd. We'll look to bring that in-house at Hopefield. And again, in terms of our health and safety and contingency planning team, we've developed a training calendar. We've now offered that to a number of partners and other organisations across Midlothian and beyond. So we're looking to, within 2018-19, we're looking to bring in a six-figure income from that service. And the last thing in terms of where we are in relation to 17-18, members will have had a recent communication that indicates that decriminalised parking is due to come into Midlothian from the beginning of April. Now, we're still waiting on Scottish Government giving final approval, but we've been in contact with Scottish Government and there's no indication that there's be any issues there. So we've had substantial discussions with our contractor, put all the arrangements in place. And as I say, that will be from the 9th of April, where there will be a different regime in Midlothian in terms of enforcing the various restrictions. Moving forward, in terms of the emerging challenges, we're currently developing a waste strategy that will come to members for consideration very shortly. But it's quite a challenge at the moment. If you've kind of picked up anything in the press, you'll be aware of the ongoing issue about recycling and about the materials that are generated from recycling. In the past, the biggest market has generally been in the Far East, China. But they've had a very much a change, and they are restricting what materials they can take in China. So that's causing quite a bit of angst. Again, I'll refer back to the meeting that was held last Friday with waste managers across Scotland. And by way of kind of an indication of how that is going to manifest itself. We've got one neighbouring authority who have gone out to tender for their dry recycling contract, and what they're finding is the prices that are coming back are greater than the landfill prices. So that authority are going to be paying more to recycle and to have that material made into another product than it would simply, say, for example, putting it into an energy from waste plant. So that kind of just gives a flavour of how serious this situation is. And that's something that's being raised through COSLA with Scottish Government. Moving on, just kind of the emerging challenge in terms of our travel service. One of the things that we're very much mindful of is reducing our carbon footprint, particularly in relation to our grey fleet. So there's quite a bit of work in that regard. So we're looking at how we can better use public transport. We're in discussions with Lothian Buses in particular, the offers that we can make to staff to encourage use of public transport. And it's also about using the investment we've got for electric charging points and electric vehicles and where we can strategically place these to make best use of that to reduce our grey fleet. And the last thing I'm going to touch on in terms of a challenge, clearly the last week or two's weather posed a challenge, but it's more the residual impact of that. I'm sure that as you've travelled around Midlothian, you'll see the condition of our road network. It has taken a severe hammering. Unfortunately, the deterioration in a road is not a linear process. It's certainly is very much influenced by weather patterns. And last week, as I say, has caused a substantial amount of damage. And we'll be looking to try and address that in the forthcoming year. But I don't want to underestimate that challenge. Chair, I'll pause at that point and happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr Moffat at this stage? Councillor Cassidy?
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I'd just like to touch on what Ricky was saying about the challenge for with the weather last week. He, and his team did a phenomenal job. Everyone I've spoken to has been full of praise for the way the roadwork was, the network was kept open. I've got a couple of things here that I'd like to just ask about. I've got a concern with is recruitment issues affecting income. Can you elaborate on the salaries issue mentioned, Ricky? What's the situation with that? I can't get my head around that one, I'm afraid.
Yeah, essentially the issue for us, and it's particularly in land services and the hard landscaping side where we require those skills, what we find is that the private sector generally are offering higher salaries. So that's where we're losing people to or where we're endeavouring to recruit. It has been difficult. However, I would say that the latest update that I had as late as this morning is that we have gone out and the likelihood is we may be able to get one or two people to allow us to extend our offering, i.e. to the private sector, in terms of where we can carry out work. So as late as today, that situation may have eased for us.
Do you have a follow-on question?
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to ask the health and safety audit as well. Why are the targets below? Were we below target? And surely this is crucial. And what are we doing to address it? Have we got a backup plan?
Yeah, I mean, essentially there was three phases in terms of health and safety, and it was about the planning, the last one, implementing, and then the auditing. It was only the auditing part, so we're doing everything. It's just that final part that we've... it's taken time to get to that. So we're now at that phase, and we'll do the auditing to say what we've done and let's prove that we've done what we say we should have done. So that's now in place.
Thank you. Does anyone else have a question for Mr Moffat? Thank you. We can move now on to finance and integrated support service performance taken by Mr. Fairley.
Thanks, Chair. Just very quickly run through the report, and as you'll be familiar, set out in the table in the report what the strategic focus is of the service, and no surprise that's around the financial strategy and the financial sustainability of the council, and having a comprehensive change programme to help us deliver our services as best we can within the resources we can generate and are provided with by government. We've got the workforce strategy, which Council approved in December, which we're working away on delivering, continuing to focus on delivering excellence to make sure every pound is used effectively and services are delivering effectively. And certainly this time, the digital strategy and the digital learning strategy, they focus on that, particularly around preparation for the new Battle Centre opening, and making sure it delivers on our expectations in terms of the technology required. In terms of specific achievements around those, in terms of financial, I suppose the position's moved on since the report was written, and in terms of we've had the third quarter monitoring, and we've set a budget for next financial year. workforce strategy, in terms of that, the other ones I'd draw attention to are really around the preparation, the work that's now ongoing to deliver against the workforce strategy, and also bearing in mind that the importance of that is we move forward to a best value audit in the forward period, particularly around making sure we've got the employee engagement activity that we've agreed as a management team underway and progressing. Touched on New Battle in terms of digital strategy, but we're also doing a power of work across schools in terms of the Wi-Fi system, and reprovisioning of that Wi-Fi to make sure it's fit for purpose. So over a short period, we've moved considerably in schools from hardwired technology to wireless technology, and really having to now go back and retrofit fit-for-purpose Wi-Fi provision. Members will be familiar with the new GDPR regulations, so the digital services team leading and supporting the council in terms of preparing for that. That comes in May this year. We are well prepared, but we're at a crunch stage where we shouldn't take the foot off the pedal, so to speak. We just need to see it through and make sure we've prepared as best we can. The other issue in digital in terms of achievement is just that continued focus on cyber resilience and cyber security. We are going through the PSN accreditation process at the moment, and we don't expect any challenge with that. We are progressing the Scottish Government's own cyber security checklist and action plan to make sure we're fully compliant there. So other than the usual being aware, there's nothing specific that we're adrift on there. Excuse me a second. In terms of the emerging challenges, no surprises, the financial strategy and looking forward, having set a budget, immediately looking forward to the June Council meeting, when we'll bring forward the next iteration of the financial strategy and the capital strategy. So not only is the revenue budget pressure, but with the growth in the school estate particularly, we've seen our capital and investment requirements quite stretched. And that's going to be the main focus as we move forward to June Council. That, making sure we're ready for GDPR, and making sure that we open a new battle. In terms of the digital technology side, I won't take any away from my colleague and the property colleagues in terms of the building itself, but making sure it's digitally ready to go for the leisure facilities, the library, and then the children. Chair, happy to pause there, take any questions.
Thank you, Councillor Baird.
Thank you. Just in terms of preparation for New Battle High, are we all on target for the revenue to support that in the next few years?
In terms of the sort of more specific, in terms of the school or the something more specific?
Yeah, in terms of the school's revenue, so for teaching and otherwise.
Yep, so the revenue budget for 18-19 reflects the opening of the school and the financial consequences of that. There's not obviously the school provides for an increased capacity going forward is demographic growth, but and when the children and teachers move in June, it's broadly just moving the new battle, the existing school in. But the budget provides for the cost of the contract and all the other arrangements that are in place.
It's just the reason I ask is that I was led to believe that there may be a gap in the revenue for New Battle as it opens over the 3 years. I was just wondering if there was any when we might see anything about that coming to council.
There's certainly a challenge in terms of providing it as a digital centre of excellence in terms of the additionality that would bring. Members will be aware that centres of excellence is part of our bid for skills, part of the skills programme in the city deal. Clearly we don't have a finalised city deal as yet, and the revenue, the skills programme got an allocation of $25 million over an 8-year period. So we don't have a guarantee that there'll be skills funding, skills city deal funding for New Battle. Kenneth, myself and Grace and Maria Lloyd met this morning, one of many meetings we've had to look at how we address that challenge. And we're prepared to bring we're preparing to recruit the staff, and if there is a financial issue that we need to address, we're bringing a report forward to council in May, if that's still a risk for us.
Councillor Smale.
Thank you. Gary, a number of topics here, not in any particular logical order. We have a small number of residual equal pay cases. Obviously, we have much less of a problem than Glasgow does, but one of the things that's emerging there is that the settlements are now being needed to involve back pension payments. I just wondered to what extent Midlothian Council is exposed to any demand beyond what we've already settled in terms of the equal pay cases, and whether that's been recognised in the budgets.
I'm familiar with that issue that Glasgow was in the press this morning. From our perspective, we settled all of the claims that we have settled, we've done through compromise agreements, and those made no provision for backdated adjustments to pensions. So I'm not expecting that there's any liability or any exposure there. But clearly, that doesn't. We'll keep an eye on that situation to make sure that there is nothing that would come back to bite us, so to speak.
The next thoughts are to do with the best value audit, which perhaps you would talk about the timescale for that. Within that, I notice that we're developing a robust contract and supplier management tool, and that we're rolling out an invoice approval functionality as part of purchase to pay. I overthought our existing systems, which had been established for a long time and which we reviewed at the audit committee on many occasions, should have been robust, but perhaps you're indicating that they haven't been, and that we need to strengthen our controls.
So those two are developments. So if we take the invoice approval process, it's really taking the process that we have at present, and you'll see that that's part of the accounts payable audit, which is on the audit committee agenda this afternoon, and really changing and modernising the way we work. And the secret being in the word that in terms of the automation. So instead of bits of paper flowing around the organisation and managers, senior officers spending time checking things and authorising them, you know, we want to be in a position where actually if we've authorised a purchase order going out the door, we've got the good receive note recorded on the system, and an invoice comes in and all those things match, we'll pay the supplier without having to have human intervention in it, really, to automate the process, because the controls are all built into the system. So it's taking that forward. Contract supplier management is really, I suppose we've been on a, since I've been in this role, we've been on a journey in terms of our procurement arrangements. We were one of the weakest councils in terms of our procurement arrangements not that long ago. We've gone through quite a considerable process, and contract supplier management is really the next stage. It's where all councils are going in terms of where we can improve, making sure that we're getting value for money on every single contract that we've got out and really pushing suppliers to deliver on all of the requirements in the contract. So it's not that we've got a feeling that we need to address. It's really room for improvement in terms of where that industry, I suppose, is going in terms of local government.
And just to round up, then the best value audit, which will no doubt look at all these issues, what's the rough timescale for that, and when will councillors be able to see their output?
I'm just trying to remember if there's an update on the audit committee this afternoon. The indication, I think, is that we'd probably be in the second tranche of best value audit, so it's probably groundwork either late this year or in the next financial year. And Audit Scotland haven't yet determined what accounts commission that our report would go to. So we need to wait in terms of the detail, but it's all driven by what accounts commission meeting will get our report, and then we'd work back from there with EY and the LAN.
Just to say, I was on the point of intervening before Gary made that comment about the best value review, which is entirely correct. The picture is that there's likely to be, the report will be sometime in 2019. The report will be published sometime in 2019. However, my intention would be that as soon as we have formal notification of that, and that will come through the local scrutiny plan, which is due to be published by the 31st of March, and which we'll bring to Council, I would anticipate, in May. That should formalise the fact that we will be subject to best value audit. And what I'd intend to do after that, bring in Audit Scotland to advise both officers and members about the details of the process, so that we're all well cited on that.
Thank you. Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you. I just looking at the audit, you maybe answered the question earlier, Gary, but why are 9 historic audits off target? It seems like quite a lot. I thought that going back would have been easier than going forward.
I know there are a few residual actions from audits that we haven't quite cleared up, and it's a combination of things. One, making sure they're not signed off until we're absolutely sure we've done them where they're essential. So, for example, around the developer contribution audit that was done, some of those actions are 95-98% complete, but we want to make sure they're absolutely signed off before we mark them as complete and leave them open so it keeps a focus on them. Others, we've probably been over ambitious when we set the target, and other events have come along that have got in the way of getting those complete, and those are the ones that actually are probably more towards a low risk. But it's something keen to close them off and move on. But I suppose from my perspective, there's nothing in those outstanding issues that creates a significant risk for us going forward. I'm comfortable that we're not leaving ourselves overly exposed in terms of any of the things that we said we would do that we haven't managed to do as yet. And I suppose that reflects just a sort of pressure of work, certainly over the autumn and early part of 2008 around the financial strategy and the challenge and the focus that's required to deliver it.
Could I ask a question? You say not overly exposed, so are you intimating that we are exposed? And should there be different planning processes in place to make sure we're not exposed? That seems quite a risk to take.
Yeah, I maybe didn't use my words as accurately as I should have. I suppose if the audit team have identified something that could be improved and there's a recommendation and we haven't signed off, then by its nature there is a risk inherent in that that we could do better. But and that's why I mean not overly. I don't think there's anything significant there that I would want to draw to audit committee's attention where there's a risk that is beyond our risk tolerance. I think we can that's what I mean by not overly exposed in terms of that. There is a risk, but I think it's they're all within our risk tolerance. I'm not aware that there's any of those items that are a real problem that you would really need to focus on, either here or at Audit Committee.
Thank you. Kenneth?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just one quick question about reserves. I was just wondering when we might expect a kind of like a post-mortem about the bad weather and the impact on reserves. Obviously, I know it takes a lot a bit of time, but when we could expect that?
So formally, we would next bring a financial update to Council, which would be the final outturn, which would be at June Council. Before that, we'll gain, as officers, an understanding as to whether we've first of all hit the Belwyn trigger of £394,000, and whether any costs above that we would legitimately be able to claim from government. So I suppose, in short, it's going to be a while before we know the final position, because we need to collate those costs. We need to understand if we can claim from Belwyn, and we then need to find out how much we might get a return from Scottish Government. But all of that will be wrapped up and reported in the final outturn report, which we'll bring to Council on in June.
Thank you. Are we all done with finance? Thank you. We now move on to 5.8, Property and Facilities Management, pages 119 to 128, and that will be taken by Mr Sherratt.
Thanks, Chair. Just going through the highlight report, as others have, starting with building services, you'll note there that the new Battle High School, as has been alluded to in several reports previously, is commencing towards its conclusion now, and there is an opening for the school in May 2018, and we hope to open the community facilities ahead of that, so we have a lead-in period of the building starting to function ahead of the school actually being populated. The various fundings that are noted in the report that have been acquired for the Council, specifically for energy programmes, you'll see that the work in Pennycook Town Hall is now commencing. We've got windows and stonework and the lights going ahead in there to make that a more efficient building. In facility services, the team there reacts obviously to situations, and there's been several of those challenges that have been thrown their way recently, the norovirus outbreaks in several schools, but more importantly things like the standby over the festive period where we have to just be available, and unfortunately we had two fires. We had the old Paradise School, which was a redundant building fortunately, and then we had the Dalkeith public toilets, which were set on fire as well, and the facility services team go out and mop up after that in a fairly efficient fashion. It's not in this report, but the janitorial team and others within my services get diverted from their daily duties when the snow falls, and they go out and clear paths to assist Ricky Moffat's team as well. And it should be noted that these bodies are really diligent in that approach, and they do it quite willingly. So they're not ones that take the chance to go off home when there's a flurry of snow. Within facility services also we have the catering team, and we've got that new move towards the online payment system, which is now live in three schools and then getting rolling out to the remainder very shortly, and that's been particularly well received, and I think we're seeing somewhere in the 70% uptake in each of the schools that we've started in. We're also looking at becoming a more commercial organisation for the catering department. And again, noted in the report that we've got external clients there through the NHS and police services, but also 12 external functions that were hosted at the Mining Museum during that quarter. In property assets, the marketing and the disposal of a few sites have taken place. Cowsland, we actually achieved above the budgeted target, and that's now with solicitors to conclude that transaction. And also the sale of the old Paradise School site, which has now been cleared of the old building, which obviously will be in negotiations with Barrett's, who are the successful party there, and offset the costs that we incurred as a council, and we'll be putting that back to Barratt's to recover back that cost from them. The energy processes at Miller Hill, we have now got an agreement with Edinburgh Council to benefit from the energy that comes out of that in conjunction with the private operator there. In sport and leisure, similar to the online catering system, online catering payment system, we've got an online service payment and booking system for sport and leisure just getting underway as well, so people will be able to book their services remotely. There's been quite a number of events, and they're listed in the report there, that the Active Schools team and other sport and leisure teams continue to operate and make sure that as many people get as many different opportunities and as many sporting outlets as possible. One that's in there that's a wee bit different was our Ageing Well coordinator and 11 of our volunteers, and she has an awful lot of volunteers that work with her. But 11 of those went out to Trinidad and Tobago to work for Habitat for Humanity, and they went out there to help build a house and introduce the country there to walking football, which Midlothian are at the forefront of. It deals with the ageing population and tries to get people active into their senior years. So it's really just one to make sure council are aware of that. In terms of challenges, I think it's been said before that the amount of building works that we have, and particularly in our schools ahead of us, is a challenge, particularly against the staffing that we have. Now, I know there was a question just earlier about how Ricky was addressing particular staffing pressures. In the professional consultancy bracket, rather than the tradesmen, we're finding that almost impossible to recruit into. It's just the market pressures that we have at the moment. We're going through our consultants, and we're trying to get the consultants to fill those gaps in the meantime, but that's a real challenge for us. Trade staff, we do have continuing pressures to make sure that we have suitable trade staff and skilled trade staff on our books, as opposed to through the agency, and there's been a big conversion. I think we've converted 43 agency staff over to on the books, which is perfectly in line with the work requirements and the budgets that we've got ahead of us. We still have a challenge of identifying future sites for the housing programme. We have identified a considerable number already, but there's competing needs for the residual land that the council own, and that's putting pressure on us to find alternative sites, maybe not owned by the council, but are available for acquisition. The opening of the new battle centre brings with itself its own challenges in terms of the operational side of things. So we've got training ongoing, even though the building's not complete at the moment. Facility services staff, along with other services out with my own, getting trained at the moment for the opening of that new facility. The decline in high school meals, now you'll see in the report that we've actually seen an upturn in the level of uptake there in high schools recently, but that's a real challenge for us. Primary schools we do very, very well, but when they get to high school, peer pressure, the fact that there's outlets on the doorstep and they go out for lunch as opposed to stay in for lunch by a rule, it's a real challenge. We are still ahead of the game in terms of the national picture, but it's an area where we need to focus and try and do better than what we've been achieving recently. Within property assets, the acquisition of the land at Shawfair from Network Rail continues to be a challenge. It's a commercial deal, and we're dealing with developers who are obviously trying to make sure that they get their cut of that same cloth that we're trying to achieve as well. We are bringing forward energy strategy proposals to council very shortly. And we're currently working on securing funds which would support that, and providing business cases for different styles of energy conservation and indeed generation. The master plan works are ongoing at Stobhill and Newton Grange, And obviously that the challenge is it's trying to meet everybody's aspirations within a community where not everybody, unfortunately, will be able to get what they would like, but trying to get a real balance of what is really needed as opposed to what people would dictate at times. Within sport and leisure, Destination Hill End, a big project in terms of the budget influence, very near to bringing something forward now. We're working on the visual presentation, which would show what the concept would deliver and how many different business strands there come together to result in the budget proposals that were put forward and heard in February. That's also alongside a sport and physical activity strategy, which has been worked on for some time, and again is aimed to be introduced around about August later this year. And then finally, by way of a sort of summary, the overall challenge that the budget has presented us, we've got probably the largest number of individual areas that the budget gives us a challenge with, and so managing that and just delivering on that will be a hard ask, but it's one that we do feel that we can deliver on. The managers and the staff indeed were all involved in creating the ideas and believe that they can be delivered, so it's just a challenge that we're going to have to hit head on. I'll pause at that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Casti?
I'm glad you brought up the Dalkeith toilets. We had a bit of an issue with this, Councillor Curran and myself, and we asked for a site visit to see what was going on. We were told when we were around there it was going to be £10,000 to reopen them, and we pointed out a few things that it didn't really need extensive work, it just needed a little bit of clean-up. And within about 3 weeks we were open for under £1,000. I'm wondering if we are in an old mindset of just throwing good money away and wasting it, you know, because we could see, we're laymen, you know, we're not builders, we're nothing, but we could see it didn't need that extensive work. So I'm wondering if there's any kind of procedure you could put into place where you could maybe have a third party have a look before we sign off something like £10,000 for something like that, because I'm kind of concerned. That's just one little thing. If we're doing that across the board throughout Midlothian, we could be losing a lot of money, you know what I mean? It's, and being a businessman, I don't like losing money. I like to preserve the coffers. So just a little heads up on that one.
No, thanks for that. I mean, I'm not making excuses the fact I wasn't here at the time when the fire took place, but we do have a set of procedures where we do look at the cause and effect of what's happened, the resultant cost it will take to rectify that. Now, I can only assume that £10,000, to me, that sounds like structural damage as opposed to just cosmetic damage. No, I'd realise that maybe there wasn't, but there might have been a response on the basis they anticipated that, but never materialised. But I'll certainly take those comments back to the team and make sure that we robustly challenge anything that's coming forward.
Thank you. Councillor Baird.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, where would, in the first instance, where would a quote come from? Would it be one of our own staff looking at the damage, or would it be initially put out to like a third party that would price it?
Initially, we do have surveyors that go out and inspect, and then they put together the works that they would anticipate to be done. We would then get that cross-checked by, if it was needed, a structural engineer, and that would then determine whether or not those works are needed. If it's just cosmetic, then that falls back to either our own trades teams to implement and do the works, or indeed we go out for quotes. They're governed by certain levels of value. Anything under £5,000 we can do fairly quickly. Anything between £5,000 and £25,000, you go about with a full specification. Above that, you're into a full tender process, which is quite onerous.
I've lost my train of thought. There wouldn't be any benefit to the people involved in that assessment to overinflate it, to, you know, to like put it off or anything like that. There'd be no reason for that.
No, we don't operate in a bonus system or anything that's going to ratchet any benefit there at all, no.
Thank you. Councillor Smail.
I noticed that immediately under the reference to Destination Hill End, there was talk of completion of a Tyne-esque leader funding application. If that's a funding application for Destination Hill End, I can see huge problems of conflict of interest, plus the problem of the state aid rules. Could you explain a little bit more what actually is being referred to here?
This was an approach made to LEADER in terms of funding the jump slopes at Hill End, which have just disappeared over the years, to try and reintroduce that. Now, they were just exploring that to see if that was a possibility. And indeed, we've not got a conclusive answer on that as we speak just now.
I think you'll find we can't do that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Sherratt? Councillor Baird?
Thank you. It was just on the proposal to reduce the janitors within the primary school estate. There was some debate whether or not it was actually feasible to have one janitor per two schools, whilst some are within like a hub setting like St Luke's and Mayfield Primary. That's sort of achievable. What have their response been, and have you identified the 11 that will effectively be made redundant as a result of that?
Yeah, prior to putting forward those proposals, we did look at each of the clusters that are able to operate together. I mean, some of them are more remote, and it's a bit more tricky to do that. We've looked at how people would transport between the places, how we would look at whether it's a split shift through a day or whether it's a day in one and a day in another, and how you open and close. And like, so it actually has been thought through right the way through. Now, obviously, that then needs consultation with the staff, and that's ongoing as we speak just now, similar with the unions. Just to make sure that everybody's fully cited on how we do that. That would then lead into a service level agreement variation with education, and get sign off on that, so that everybody's aware of what reduction in service is going to be, and there will be, because that's what the proposal was, but how we can best cover what's there to be done.
Just on that point as well about union representation, how many of the current 22 are represented by the union, and is there any will there be any discrepancy between how non-represented and represented staff are treated or approached?
In terms of membership, I can't answer that question, but in terms of how we deal with the staff, it will be a fair and equitable in line with the change policy. There won't be any influence with that.
Thank you. I have a question. We've spoken to some school pupils who say if they're not out sharp and they're at the very end of the queue for school lunches, it's far quicker to go into town and get lunch than wait in the queue, because then they don't have enough time to eat their meal and be ready for their next class. So is there anything you can do to quicken up the process, or have more hatchery services or something different to deliver the school meals at the point of eating?
Yeah, I mean, you'll not be surprised to hear that that's something we have looked at. We've got, last week, I think, three different outlets, one main one and two smaller ones that are staffed up. It does come down to resource as well. If we had more outlets, then we'd have more staff serving at those outlets or spread over a different area. At Last Wade, for example, we introduced what we call the wheelie box, which is out in the playground as well, to try and give pupils an alternative rather than staying inside all the time. We're looking to do something similar up at Newbattle. The model that we've got in the new schools is to again look at these multiple outlets where possible. I'm presuming that the question is really orientated towards high school staff queues. We in the primary schools are more successful about staggering the lunches from different year groups. High schools tend not to allow us to do that as easily. So I will take the comments back and see if there's anything else that we can do to assist on that one.
Thank you. Any more questions for Mr. Sherratt? Thank you very much. And we can now move on to 5.9, the Council's Quarter 3 Report, page 139 to 152, and that will be taken by Mr. Laurie.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, this Quarter 3 report is set out in the context of the and under the headings of the Single Midlothian Plan priorities, and of course we will be bringing the new 18-19 Single Midlothian Plan to Council in due course, probably in May. We covered a lot of detail in the service reports over the last 2 hours, so I don't intend to repeat that. I suppose what I would say is that, you know, as a council, and this will be reflected when we get the local scrutiny plan from the Audit Scotland and other scrutiny bodies, across the council, performance is broadly strong. I think there's a lot of positive work ongoing. There's a lot of ambition associated with what we're trying to do. And there's clearly some areas, and you'll see this both in the reports in front of you today, but also in the when we bring forward the benchmarking report for the last year in due course, areas where we do need to improve. Alongside that, there's the issue, of course, of improved financial performance as well. And this Quarter 3 report, of course, was written in advance of the budget decisions, but now that these budget decisions have been taken, our primary focus for the senior team is that robust implementation plan to ensure that we do make the savings that have been decided upon, and that we take the needs of those impacted by these savings into account in doing so. Alongside that, there's about the next phase of transformation or the Delivering Excellence strategy, the new reviews, the other pieces of work which the Council has agreed upon, including the bottom-up review programme, and focusing that and bringing that into the transformation programme as we move forward. Alongside all of that, and this has come up in a number of the discussions today, you know, our strapline for Midlothian is a great place to grow, and that says something about our, you know, ambition as a place to live, as a place to work, as a place to grow up, as a place to be educated. And there's a lot that's very positive about that. But of course, one thing that's very live in our communities and very much, I think, understood by our various heads of service in various contexts is the pressures that come with being the fastest growing council. And, you know, we've spoken about the potential through City Deal to get some resource in terms of infrastructure. We've got our approach to developer contributions to try and ensure that we are producing infrastructure. But you think of the pressures in terms of transport, early years, the learning estate in particular, the housing programme, health and social care, and the other infrastructure requirements. It is an enormous challenge for the council. I always say when people ask that it's better to be a growing council than a shrinking one. I'm not complaining about that growth, but the management of it and the management of that in the context of our financial position and dealing with the infrastructure requirements and demands that flow from that will be incredibly challenging. And when Gary Fairley was speaking, he spoke about the need to move to having an overall capital strategy for that forward period. The aim for that is June. I think that's a really important work because of course the capital demands in relation to these early years of school estate, etc., then feed back onto the revenue budget in terms of servicing that expenditure. And the other thing that as officers we're very keen to do is move towards a 5-year budget strategy, so that we're not simply taking a series of decisions in a budget to see us through the next year, the next couple of years, but we're actually looking to that longer term, and the input of members into that will be very important. There's a lot else I could say, Chair, but after 2 hours, I'll just leave it for members to ask me any questions they wish to ask.
Thank you. Councillor Baird.
Thank you. It's just one quick one. I noticed there was a trend across a lot of the reports about the complaints process. Am I right in thinking that the five days it counts for a complaint to be processed, is that counting every single day and not working days?
That's a good question. I thought you were going to ask something slightly different from that, so I'll do the classic thing and I'll answer the question I thought you were going to ask, and then I'll try and deal with what you did ask. We are, in terms of our approach to complaints and the kind of statistics generated, we are, the SPSO, the Ombudsman, sets criteria that we follow. And one thing that has become clear, which was previously inconsistent, not just here but in other councils as well, is that the day you receive the complaint is not day zero, it's day one. So in terms of the five-day target, actually, it's not that you start counting from the following day, even if it comes in at 5 o'clock, that is the first day. And so that's knocked aside our statistics to a degree. I think also we've had some problems with the system, and this is partly, I think, to do with the age of the CRM we use, and Kevin spoke about the fact we're procuring a new CRM with East Lothian Council. So sometimes the statistics have looked poor, not because the complaints have not been dealt with, but because they have not been closed off in the system. And so that's something we're working through at the moment. And we're still in a slight state of flux on that, which is why the figures look poor at the moment. I think we also just need to be a bit more precise about precisely what a complaint is. And this came forward, I think, to the last meeting of this committee when we had the annual complaints report, and the overwhelming proportion of them came from waste services. And in fact, these were, you know, people phoning up about a missed bin, which is a matter that could be resolved potentially very quickly. So we've got more work to do in complaints. I'm hoping that going into the next financial year, we've got that robustness in the system, which has been slightly lacking in the most recent period. In terms of whether, this has given me some thinking time, in terms of whether weekend days count, I do not think they do. So it is working days. The difference from what we were doing previously in some areas is that the day the complaint is received, even if it's the end of the day, is day one. Where that causes us problems is, you know, if a complaint's received to a head teacher on the last day of the school term, then dealing within 5 days might be, as you can imagine, rather difficult.
Thank you. Yeah. Any other questions?
Yeah, just to follow up on that, that is exactly the example I was given when I asked about the complaints process, was that if a complaint within education is received at the end of term, it's dealt with at the start of the new term. So that's adding huge numbers to the metrics. As someone who lived and died by like complaint resolution times in previous jobs, it is very important to those who are dealing with those complaints if they're given. So say like those that work in customer service, they'll be looking at those stats and seeing a red and feeling that their performance is inadequate, or feeling that or if they know what's going on, they'll feel that the system's failing them and misrepresenting their hard work. I can tell you that from personal experience, that it's been the system that's misrepresenting your hard work. So be keen to see that kind of result, given kind of more understanding and have a more robust kind of reporting process that actually reflected the work that was done and when that's good and when that's bad.
Thank you. Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Chair. In regards to complaints, how do you, as the Chief Exec, look at when a local member has an issue from a constituent, come to surgery, etc., and the following day we actually put that complaint to whatever division it was alluded to? What would you think is a right and proper timescale for that councillor to get that report back?
Well, the target in relation to stage one complaints is 5 days, and I think 5 days for an initial response is reasonable. I mean, I think it depends a little bit on the nature of the complaint, because sometimes councillors ask issues which need an immediate response. And I think there's a need for heads of service and others to show a kind of degree of insight into that. More broadly, I think sometimes issues are exceptionally complicated and need time, but if that is the case, then it is about acknowledging the complaint, saying that it's going to take some time, and preferably giving an indication of the timescale it will take. I guess by your question that we're not always meeting that requirement.
I would say very rarely is that target met on a councillor's complaint. Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. Kenneth, do we have a projected overspend in the fourth quarter? And if so, do we have any plans to mitigate this? You got anything up your sleeve?
I mean, I'm hoping that if we look at the trajectory of spend over the most recent period and the measures that we've taken as a management team, indeed instructions from myself in terms of spend and restricting unnecessary spend, indeed eliminating unnecessary spend in the final months of the year, I think there's a good chance we'll come in on budget. Now, there are issues that can threaten that, and we spoke about the winter weather, and we await to see how much might be forthcoming from the Scottish Government in terms of Belwyn, but I'd anticipate we will have, even with Belwyn, we will have a significant overspend in that area. I mean, as a senior team, we're constantly looking at ways we can alleviate and deal with the financial pressures. So I'm not sure I'd say I've got things up my sleeve particularly, but we do take a robust approach and a robust monitoring approach to financial management, so that if there are issues emerging, we identify that at the earliest possible stage. We can ensure that the Council have a full overview of that and the proposed actions we may have at that stage to address them.
Thank you. I have a question. The whole trend is that the whole of the Council is overspending in one way or another, and I wonder, is there anything that the directorates can do to work together more harmoniously in order to keep the spend down?
Well, I think the directorates working together on a harmonious basis is required from all aspects. Policy, the delivery of projects and funding as well, and I think in general that does work very well. I mean, I suppose the most significant examples that are coming in front of you as members on a regular basis are these schools project, which are very much, you know, they're whole council pieces of work, particularly as we bring forward hub provision as you know, sport and leisure and health facilities, etc. So I suppose I'd say that on all such projects, and indeed more generally, the effectiveness of the Council working on a corporate basis as opposed to on a separate directorate basis is absolutely fundamental. I mean, we don't... many of our projects and much of what we do is cross-directorate. The sort of format you have at your meetings today, where each head of service comes and talks about what they're doing, I think is an appropriate way to report performance, but in terms of working arrangements, things are and need to be much more integrated. And as we move forward and with the scale of the financial challenge, and this was trailed to a degree in the papers that came in front of you in the budget, it's not simply about the strength of that joint working across the council. It's also about you know, how we work with communities and other organisations and through the community planning partnership, because it is undoubtedly the case that an awful lot of the challenges we face in Midlothian aren't challenges that the Council will deal with alone. We'll deal with them in partnership with others, and that relates both to the doing what needs to be done and also the funding of these actions.
Thank you. It was only after we were speaking about the Veterans Project that I remembered my time as whatever I was in the Navy Reserve, and we had familiarisation days with other regiments, divisions, etc., just so we would become familiar with each other and what happens and what we all do on a very local level. But I don't ever see that happening in councils. Is that a way we could think of for the future?
I think we need to be in a time of financial constraint particularly, we need to be very open to new ideas and new ways we can improve how we work as a council. I mean, I think that in terms of the projects we do and staff, probably particularly in based in Dalkeith, at Fairfield and Midlothian Houses, there is a very high degree of joint working, because actually an awful lot of the work we do doesn't relate to the work of a single department. I think probably staff at the front line inevitably are less familiar with what goes on elsewhere, and if there's ways we can improve that, partly through our communications, and we now have our new Connect e-newsletter, which goes to staff, the second edition of which came out just last week. And I think we always need to be looking at new ways to improve that kind of communication and flow of information and understanding across the organisation. So new ideas are always welcome in that regard.
Thank you. Is there any more questions on that topic? Thank you very much. There are no private reports. And the date of our next meeting is the 24th of April at 11 o'clock. Thank you very much for your attendance, and make sure you have a successful day.